Hey, thanks for jumping into this Pathway to Purpose episode. We're moving into the second segment of Ken Blanchard's series, Lead Like Jesus. But before we do that, let me remind you that there's so much great Christian business leader content. There's events, conferences, and our online business community called Connect at FCCI.org. So please don't miss out on all the ways FCCI can serve your leadership journey when you go to our website. Well, we'll hear from Ken Blanchard in just a moment, but with me today, I've got a couple of guests, Tony Emmanuel and Matt Ellsbury, and it's great to have you guys with us. Welcome.
Hey, cool.
Hey Ken, good to be with you. Good to see you.
Well, let's do some quick introductions, and our listeners are going to immediately recognize your accent, Tony. They're going to know that you're from Nashville, Tennessee, but tell us a little bit about you.
All right. Been here a long time, and my friends in South Africa accuse me of having an American accent, which I swear I do to them. But I'm from South Africa originally. Got here in 1985 on a three-year contract. Said I was going to leave Nashville right at the end of the 3 years, and here I am. This has been a long haul, and I love the city. Been a member of FCCI very soon after I got here. And got into business here, and I wouldn't go back and change one day of the time that I've walked in this community. This go it alone, God bless those people who love independence. It's way overrated. You know, you need to be part of a community, and I feel like I am with that. And here I am. I'm really strictly ought to be retiring, but I'm not because I can't spell the word properly. So I'm in business with my son and my two daughters. I step back. I'm not the CEO of any of the three. They are, but I'm still in the background. My training is in accounting. I grew up in Deloitte's in South Africa and England, and still keep that analytical. I call myself a translator. I translate everything into dollars, cents, and if I can't translate it into money, it's very hard for me to get my hands around it and understand where am I going with this. So not that money is the guiding light in my life. It's just a way I have of keeping everything grounded and not just flying off into the great beyond.
Well, Tony, it's been wonderful to have you as a part of an FCCI group for many, many years. And I know the folks in that group have definitely benefited from all that you bring to the table. So, and Matt, we've enjoyed getting to know each other as a part of an FCCI group. It's in Alpharetta, Georgia, but tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Yeah, thanks, Ken. I was exposed to FCCI very early in my career. I joined a nonprofit called Crown Financial Ministries that actually kind of merged for a short season with FCCI back in the early 2000s. Right. And as such, actually my very first trip traveling with Crown was to the FCCI conference in Maui, which was, I want to say, like 9 or 10 days after 9/11, 2001.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Which was a quite an experience. And as a young kid, I was 22, 23 years old, experiencing this and getting to watch guys like Bobby Mitchell and Larry Burkett and Bill Leonard and others who were part of the FCCI community really authentically live out their faith through business, and even reading Business by the Book as the very first exposure I had to Crown, kind of reading that story. Was incredible. And so I had 9 years in the nonprofit world, kind of understanding that. It was very entrepreneurial through that process, but really became impassioned about seeing business as a tool to bring the kingdom and kind of health and holistic help to people in poverty around the world through investment rather than through charity. So left the nonprofit world in 2010, moved to Indonesia to try to put that into practice through some businesses there run by a friend of mine. Now in a company called Liftful, where we're actively trying to reimagine how health innovation is done by serving, believing that if we can serve the least and the most resource-constrained environments in the world, that we actually can deliver better value to everyone in the world. So it's a wild kingdom ride, but FCCI has been a huge part of that journey. I haven't formally been a part of FCCI since those early days until just this last December, January, when I joined the group. But I've loved every minute of having kind of a cathartic group of similar entrepreneurs, business leaders that deal with the pains and stresses and heartache and joys of this fun game of business together.
Well, we'll dive into some more conversation with Matt and Tony right after this segment with Ken Blanchard. I know you're going to enjoy. This was recorded live at an FCCI international conference.
The best way, I think, to move from success to significance is to lead your organization like Jesus. And is Jesus against money? No. He got mad at that guy who buried it. But he says money is the root of all evil. And as I heard in the ethics session, is that a lot of people on Wall Street and other places think the only reason to be in business is to make money. No, that's not a reason. Profit is the applause you get for creating a motivating environment for your people and taking care of your customers. It's not a reason for being. If it is, then you got the wrong deal. You don't understand the faith. See, because where we get hooked by the evil one, which is, I love, that's what Norman always called him, the evil one, is that he convinces you that your self-worth is a function of your performance plus the opinion of others. And if he got you into that, he has you. Why? How many of you know your performance isn't great every day? If any of you ever noticed? Do you ever have a bad hair day? Bad hair quarter? Bad hair year? And have you ever noticed that people are fickle? One moment they're for you, next minute they're against you. So if your self-worth is always out there, he's got you. Because every day your self-worth is up for grabs. And what you got to understand is that your self-worth is not a function of how much money you make, recognition you get, power and status. Those are nice. There's nothing wrong with those. But what did God want? What's the opposite of making money? It's generosity of time, talent, treasure, touch. What's the opposite of recognition? It's service. What's the opposite of power and status? It's loving relationships. And I was blown away when I realized that Jesus, I love that whole scene in Matthew where John and James bring their mother to see Jesus, you know. You got to bring your Jewish mother to straighten them out, you know, and says, can one of my sons sit at your left hand and one at your right hand in your heaven? Look, thought it was a hierarchy. And what did Jesus say? After he said, it's not for me to grant, he sat the disciples down, probably one of the most powerful speeches ever. He said to them, the Gentiles lord power over people. They use authority. Not so with you. And he essentially was saying, if you want to be first, you need to be last. If you want to lead, you need to follow. Even I have come to serve, not to be served. And therefore, there's a mandate from Jesus that you be servant leaders. It's not an option. Now, a lot of people, when I'm out in the business world, I mention servant leadership, they think it's about the inmates running the prison or trying to please everybody or some kind of religious movement. No. It's the only way to get great results and great human satisfaction together. And I'm working on a book now called Servant Leadership in Action with chapters by people who have proven that, like Tony Dungy, you know, the Indianapolis Colts coach. I wrote a book with Colleen Barrett, who was president of Southwest Airlines. The whole airline industry has lost money in its history. And Southwest made money for 40 straight years. And the title of the book is Lead with Love. Love is spelled L-U-V because that's their stock symbol. They're on Love Lane and they fly out of Love Field. And you know what? Duh. You know who the number one customer for Southwest is? Is their people. And they talk about this. If you treat our people with golden rule behavior, and empower and train them, they will become passionate about what they do, and they'll take care of our number two customer, which is the people who fly our airlines. And if they do a great job there, then what happens is they're going to want to come back, and that takes care of the third most important customer, the stockholders. Profit is the applause you get for creating a motivating environment for your people and taking care of your customers. And servant leadership, as Jesus taught it, we look at the heart, the head, the hands, and the habits of doing that. And you ought to go online, leadlikejesus.com, to see what we're doing, is because the Lord has just taken that thing just viral. I mean, it's just going everywhere. So interesting, when we first started, I wanted to be a sister organization to Bob Buford's Faith Works. We called it the Center for Faith Walk Leadership because, you know, we didn't want to offend anybody. Then we got a national board, and we got a great brand manager on our board. And he looked at all of our stuff, and he said, the Center for Faith Walk Leadership ought to be your address, but you're in the Lead Like Jesus business. And the minute we changed that, you should have seen it, because what does the Lord promise? If you raise up my name, what is he going to do? He's going to do all the marketing. He's going to do all the sales. Don't worry about it. You know, it's when you duck that, see. And about 3 or 4 years ago, we were having a national board meeting, and one of the board members said, we're doing great, but our goal isn't so ridiculous yet that only God could accomplish it. And so Phil Hodges woke up in the middle of the night, came in the next morning, he said, I got it. You know what our goal now is? 7 billion souls served daily by the impact of people leading like Jesus. And since then, we have 40 trainers in India. They started the Lead Like Jesus Society in India. I did a session in Singapore a year ago. I had 150 people from 9 nations. We trained 2,000 people in Uganda in October, and the people who were trained there to do the training have gone to Kenya, and now we got calls from Rwanda. They want to take it there and all. I just go, okay. You know, and the point is it's the only way to do it. And you don't have to announce to people that you're leading like Jesus, but you have to understand that there's two parts of servant leadership as he taught it. The first is the leadership part of servant leadership, which is you got to have something to follow. And so you need a compelling vision, you need clear goals, you need initiatives. I have if you want to read some fun stuff, we have a blog now called How You Lead Now, and I've got a whole series on the one-minute manager goes to Washington. God, do they need help there. But the first secret that I would do in Washington, we don't have a vision for this country anymore. And see, a compelling vision, I wrote a book on it called Full Steam Ahead, tells you who you are, what business we're in. We don't know what business we're in. Are we supposed to, you know, save the world for democracy? Are we supposed to be a great economic institution? What are we supposed to do? So it tells you who you are, what business you're in, where you're going, which is if we do a great job, what will happen? And then it tells you what will guide your journey, which are your values. We don't have any agreed upon values anymore. It's the squeaky wheel. That the values are. You know, Bill Moyer can swear on TV, and Dan Cathy can say he believes marriage is as the Bible defines, and he gets appeared as two heads. And all, where are values? You know, how do you describe them? And so the first part of being a servant leader is having something to serve. If you have nothing to serve, the only thing to serve is what? Yourself. And so why is Southwest beat everybody? Because you ask anybody who works for Southwest, and it's interesting, they bought AirTran recently. You'll notice they haven't changed the name of AirTran. They're not going to do that for at least 2 years until they have got them completely into their culture. Because they don't want somebody going to a booth that's run by AirTran, but they don't understand the culture and the vision of Southwest. You ask anybody in Southwest, what business are you in? You know what they'll tell you? We're in the customer service business. We happen to fly airplanes. You know what their picture of the future is? And this is wonderful. They all get excited about it. Herb Kelleher, he was a lawyer. you know, and he just got upset in the 70s that only rich people and business people were flying. You know what their picture of the future is? That every American should have an opportunity to be with a friend or a loved one in a happy time or a sad time. They want to democratize the airways. And they get calls all the time in Dallas. Do you fly here? And they say, why are you asking? Well, my kid's applying to colleges, and I don't want him to go to a college. I can't afford to go see him. And so, I mean, they all know what they're doing. And you know what their values are? They got four of them, and you don't need tons of values. Most companies don't have any values. And if you talk about, you know, the ethics session, you cannot run an ethical company without a set of operating values. Because what are you going to judge behavior against? You just can't say, just be ethical. Well, our number one value is ethical in our company. And all that's really important. Our number two value is relationships with our people, our customers, our suppliers. Our number three value is success, running a profitable, well-run organization. And our number four value is learning. But then you got to define them. And when we talk about ethics, you know, which I wrote this book with Norman Vincent Peale on ethics. You know, sometimes people make ethics too complicated. There's two parts of being ethical. One is knowing what is the right thing to do, and the second is doing it. And we thought when we started that the bigger problem was doing it, because most people know what's right. Even Madoff knew what was right. You know, I mean, if you really look into their hearts and all that kind of thing, it's sort of doing it, because they get sidetracked by self-serving interests in there. And so, you know, little kids will say, that's not fair, that's mine. Well, who taught them that? I think we intuitively come into this world in God's image, and we know what's right. But Norman and I thought we'd try to help people anyway. So we developed an ethics check, which is a combination of questions that other people have asked. But the first question, is it legal? So it's a question you want to ask. Is it legal with the law, and is it according to company policy? The problem with that is that most people, that's the only question they consider. I wrote an article about Joe Paterno, who I loved, and I thought he was an amazing human being. But in that whole sex scandal thing, all he checked was, is it legal? And he didn't answer the other two questions. And he died earlier than he needed to of a broken heart because he didn't ask the second two questions. The second question is it fair to all involved? Fairness question. Was it fair to the victims? Is it fair to all involved? And the last one, which is so powerful, is it's a self-esteem question. Is if you do or don't do what you're thinking about doing, is would you like it published in the local newspaper? Would you like your children to know or your grandkids to know? That's a really powerful question.
Well, we just heard, as Ken Blanchard was talking about, moving from success to significance. And I know that we, in both the groups that you guys are part of, we've gone through a study called Holy Ambition with Chip Ingram. And he talks about not just having a great strategic plan and a great implementation strategy, but really understanding the why, kind of starting with that dislocated heart, a broken spirit, and having a radical faith, all things that he say, these are foundational. If you want to be significant in your impact and influence in the world, that you got to have that, not just achieving the financial success that we so often pursue in the world. So, Tony, love to hear your thoughts. I know you've been through that study, and I know you've got a lot that you care about when it comes to really being focused on this topic of significance.
Well, I kind of trace it back to my 3-year contract that brought me to the States. This company was $100 million, 1,200 employees, very seasonal windows. And the management would have total disregard for the employees. Mm-hmm. So as business fell off, if business fell 10%, you dump 10% of the people. And that attitude where the people really didn't matter. Mm-hmm. And when I got out of that ugly environment and I resolved that I will not do that, I just won't. And so since I've been in business, I have had this policy that I'd rather not hire you than hire you and then mistreat you and lay you off just because business is bad. Mm-hmm. Now I realize it's I don't say I don't fire people. If somebody just won't do the job or can't do the job, they really need to be somewhere else. But just because I'm in a seasonal business, and so just to bring it to the current time, now with my daughter, we have these three big nursery schools. And when the pandemic hit, the first fear amongst all the employees was, oh, well, I'm out of a job. Mm. We made, through my daughter and myself, we made a promise to all the employees, even if we are shut down, and we were for a while, you will still get paid your normal pay. And I was telling this to somebody, and they looked at me and said, are you utterly crazy? You are supposed to be an accountant. Can you not add? And I said, no, I'm not laying one of them off. And we did have savings. We were saving for the next school. So we had some funds, but not enough. And we refused to lay anybody off. And then what happened is the PPP program came along and nothing. We were able to do it just like we said. Yeah. Well, the end result of that is I could have made more money if we just let them all go when times are bad, but the revenue stopped. People's kids weren't coming to school. They weren't expected to pay. Mm. But the end result of it, Ken and Matt, is that we have a hugely stable workforce. Mm-hmm. In an industry where turnover is irrational. It's so bad. People come and work and gone before you know it. And so just by focusing on how important is your business if not for your people? What are you? Mm. You know, my mother was in business in personnel consulting agencies in Johannesburg. The logo of the business was your company is judged by the people it keeps. Hmm. And we are able here in Nashville where the industry, the childcare industry, is pretty much in turmoil. We have a completely stable workforce. And not that we did it so that we would have a stable workforce, but that's what we got by disregarding the straight out of business school. Hey, you know, profit is it.
Right. What? Yeah. Which ties in so beautifully to the next thing that we heard. One of the things we heard from Ken Blanchard, that quote that I just love from him, where he says, profit is the applause you get for creating a motivating environment for your people and taking care of your customers. And that's exactly what you just described, Tony, in that example, is that, you know, the significance, focusing on significance by caring for the people above profit, above what we might call success. And yet in the end, you're experiencing both the significant impact in people's lives and success because of creating that kind of a caring environment that people really respond to. I was looking, Seth Buechely's written a book called Ambition, Leading with Gratitude. And where he really talks about is the attitude of the leader and having gratitude and joy that really creates that kind of environment when we treat people well. And I've been struck by a quote as he was in the book. He talks about Dr. Brené Brown and her 12 years of research, 11,000 pieces of data that went into the research. And she said that she went into the research thinking that the relationship between joy and gratitude was, if you're joyful, then you should have gratitude. But it wasn't that way at all. She says it was really that by practicing gratitude, you invite joy into people's lives. And that's part of that, creating that environment, that culture where there is truly that ability for people to feel like they're being cared for, and creating that environment of care for our customers. But Matt, would love to hear your thoughts as you heard what Tony just shared and some of what you've experienced as well.
You know, one of the big things that's been important for us, our business, we are nonprofit aid, ultimately brings a lack of dignity to them, because in a sense, your true customer is not the person in poverty that you're trying to help. It's the donor that oftentimes lives thousands of miles away from them, has a very different set of circumstances. But in order for you to continually be funded, if you kind of strip it out to its crude you know, the crude bare bones of what's left, you're really trying to please and serve that donor. And if they're satisfied, they're going to continue to, you know, keep your revenue stream going. But if you look at that person, in our case, it's making $5 to $10 a day, and you ask the question, where are they suffering? Where are they hurting? And if you can create products and services for them that cause them to part with their very precious and hard-earned money, then you really know that you're providing a service to them that's valuable, a product or a service to them that's valuable. And in a sense, that they're voting, they're telling you that with their wallet, whereas it's much harder to do with a gift or something that's provided in a subsidized or free way. And so you kind of rob that market, you know, that we all know is there and can be helpful, that invisible hand. But two, you really rob dignity of those that you're trying to help, and chance for that applause for your customers to give, to say, oh my gosh, you've created something that is so valuable for me that I will part with some of my $5 a day hard-earned income in order to purchase it, because my life is genuinely better because you took the time to design that product that will actually solve that need for me. And so the pinnacle of our design process is that person, and not the donor or an investor or something else. And so I think that is that really made me think of that when you mentioned that quote on the proffer, when Ken Blanchard mentioned that the profit is the applause that we get for kind of figuring that out, right? And I also want to say on that joy, kind of that corollary between, you know, joy and gratitude, that is a very, is a very tough thing, I think, in entrepreneurship. At least for us, we've really, and I, most entrepreneurs I've talked to, you go through a lot of seasons where it's just difficult. And
it's hard. Yeah.
It just would be a lot easier to just have a job where someone else is taking the flak and, you know, the gunfire from all of that. And I had a really unique opportunity a year and a half or so ago. We were in a pretty difficult kind of coming out of COVID, but more than COVID, the COVID hangover, where now everybody's kind of like, okay, the world's back to normal. Why is your business not thriving and recovered like the economy is, or, you know, we seem to be out of the pandemic. And there was a particularly difficult time where we at the end of our funding, trying to raise a round of funding, and just going through a lot of that, the angst that comes with that. And I just had that moment where I was, you know, just like, God, I just don't want to do this anymore. And he gave me a gift, Ken, where it was like, I experienced a lifetime of just kind of having a job for 40 years in about 2 minutes of just, it's like people talk about their life, their past life flashing before their eyes. I had kind of my future life flash before my eyes, where I got to experience just kind of doing stuff that, you know, didn't really matter in the term, you know, in terms of the giant that we're tackling, health innovation, reinventing that, and kind of what that would look like, giving my life to a paycheck, basically, rather than this crazy journey of the kingdom and risk and faith and all of those things. And in that 2 minutes, I experienced just the weight of depression, a lifetime of depression in those 2 minutes, and just was reinvigorated, reinfused with, you know, like, Matt, are you really gonna want to do anything else other than this?
Yeah.
And that was a gift. And so when I think about that gratitude, like, yes, there is a practice of it, but even the practice of it, and sometimes I think is a gift from God. He just takes us in those moments, helps us see things that we wouldn't probably naturally see on our own, and it elicits that response of joy and gratitude. You know, not even of our own doing, at least not for me in that case. You probably, maybe some people can do it with just their own practice of gratitude.
Right.
I experienced a lifetime of depression in those 2 minutes before I could get there.
Yeah. I think for most people, it really does take very intentional. I am going to practice this attitude of gratitude. And I loved how you, as you were talking about, you know, even your customer base, how you're infusing into them self-worth. that the goal, the purpose is not, hey, can we make money off of them? It's how can we serve them and how can we pour into them value, dignity, as you described it. And, you know, even for as a leader, you know, typically that focus on, you know, self-worth for us as leaders, it's typically a function of performance plus the opinion of others. As Ken Blanchard was talking about that attitude, and people are, you know, as he said, people are fickle and self-worth cannot be dependent on people's opinions. We know that's true, and yet we still go there. So I guess I'd love to just hear maybe, Tony, your thoughts. How do we really get to that place of seeing generosity, service, and loving relationships, as Ken pointed out, to really be the core of what drives us to a place of being a great leader, in the sense that our self-worth isn't based on performance. It's not based on opinion. And so we can allow ourselves to lead in a way that allows others to succeed, allows them to flourish, because even if they perform at a higher level than we can, it's okay. I'm not dependent on that opinion of others, but I can really just, in humility, serve others well through my leadership.
Impressed how Matt talks about the dignity of your customer. Mm-hmm. And if your customer is needing some affirmation, some dignity, and you can give it to them, yeah, it doesn't matter what your product is, you have given them joy, you've given them self-worth. Yeah. And I am saying, to me, looking after the teachers in the schools, it's important, but if you think back to your kids when they were in preschool and so on, there's nothing greater than the relationship a kid can have with a teacher. And if a teacher is there for a year, 2 years, 3 years at a time, that relationship deepens and becomes so valuable, as opposed to a different teacher every 3 months because you're paying minimum wage and you know, and the teacher doesn't think this is a real job. This is, you know, something I can do till I find a real job. And so you may think, or I may think, and Amy may think, that yes, we're taking care of the teachers, but actually in the end, right, you're taking care of the parents, mm-hmm, and those kids that are in the school. You know, I'm not saying, unfortunately, I've got this analytic streak, and you know, my accounting background is, I can't get rid of it, Ken. So I do translate everything into money. And in the end, there's only so much money that matters. Hmm. And you know, once you've got sufficient for the purposes you're doing, extra is not relevant. You know, it's what you are given. You're the steward, and God picked you because you're doing a good job and has given you more than you need. Well, what for? For the people who need it, not for yourself. How many steaks can you eat? You know, one a night, that's it. You can't drive three cars. You can only drive one at a time. So it becomes, you do need the money because you can't pay the teachers. I can't run the business short on funds. And as you say, Matt, it's a constant thing with guys like us who don't come in with oodles of capital behind our name. You come in and you got to earn it. You got to get it. And, you know, so it doesn't mean you can just ignore money. You really do need to get it so that you have sufficient to do what you want to do. But beyond that, It doesn't matter. Honestly, it doesn't. And I would say the greatest thing I've learned in FCCI, Ken, is that it's actually not your company. You know, it's not. And it's so easy to say. You can say it, slip off the end of your tongue to anybody. But until you actually believe it, you're on your own. Then you really are just typical American business. And that's the last thing we all need to be. You know, we're running this business for God, for heaven's sake. Why would you run this into the ground? Why would you mess it up? Why would you run it for your personal gain? Makes no sense if it's not yours in the first place.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love a quote from Russ Crossan along those lines in his book, What Makes a Leader Great? And in that he says, Earth is not our permanent home. Therefore, yeah. we can give up our need for control, our desire to race ahead, our goal to achieve only what we think is important, because there's something much greater at stake here, our call from God to build others up. And as he talks about being disciple makers and caring more about the people, and even as you were talking about the teachers, Tony, and how you're caring for them and you're pouring into them and you're investing into them. And then from there is the outflow within that school to care for the customer and meet that need and how critical that is. So
we all as people, just we long to grow and become more of who we are. We would use, you know, the terminology called to be. I think for a lot of our non-Christian employees, there's really this element of trying to dig into your superpower. What's the unique thing that you can offer to the world that no one else can? And if your company can help you, I think this is one of the big secrets in, like, you know, the future of business and discipleship and business training or whatever, that there's actually strong alignment for you as a business to help people, especially if you're doing something that matters for humanity, right? There's a strong alignment for you to encourage your employees to become more of who they are, right? Or we would say who God has called them to be, who God has uniquely designed them to be. They can articulate the world that they want to see and their potential role in it. They have every incentive to become better human beings, better disciples, better followers of this calling and this truth that hopefully you are also living out as a faith-driven business leader. And so it actually becomes just tantamount to the process of becoming kind of like training up holistic employees or discipled employees to help them articulate those things, not in a overbearing kind of faith-centric kind of a way, because we have, you know, we have offices and places where there's, you know, Christians are definitely not the majority, and, you know, contemplate having offices, you know, in places where there's a real stretch to have anything, you know, associated formally with Christianity. But in every place, you know, the world's best organization development experts say that it's not a luxury to hire, fire, and promote people based on your values, that it's a necessity. Like, you cannot have thriving business culture unless you do that, right? So it's not, this isn't some like Christian thing that's kind of like antithetical to the world. This is what the world's leading experts are saying, Christian or not, that you have to, in a sense, die on that altar of culture. And I think as Christian business leaders, we have the opportunity to kind of mirror our culture towards the servant-led kingdom culture of, you know, the way Jesus modeled it for us, which is that whoever wants to be great among you must become a servant, and that the least are to be put first. And there's just so much to unpack with that. But this idea that for each employee, that you're creating something, you're inviting them into this journey to pursue a world that makes sense to them, that they want to be a part of creating. And you can self-select out people that don't care about that, regardless of their belief or background. If they don't want to make the world a better place, or they don't have a vision for a better world, they're not going to fit in our culture. And that's pretty cool to tell, or pretty easy to tell early on. And so you can kind of gravitate yourself towards employees that are going to resonate with that kind of vision. But then that's just this whole tool that becomes a model for, you know, self-actualization, if you're using kind of a psychology world term, or discipleship, if you want to use the Christian term, where you're just helping people become the best version of themselves so that they can authentically discover that and then have something to offer to the world that matters, which hopefully includes thriving in your organization. And so, I think that's a really secret sauce for us. And as we build that kind of a culture within Liftful, it's really just having a conversation with our the one who's implementing this with me, and our operations manager, and she's Muslim, and we have these just robust conversations about how our faith influences how we build these kind of things into the core DNA of the business. And I love it. It's like such a fun, robust conversation.
That's fantastic.
Kind of like how my faith and her faith kind of influences this culture that we're trying to create. And I love to say that I have a phrase. I love to say that the truth is not afraid of your religion, and that, you know, there we do happen to know that the truth is a person from our Christian faith, and that Jesus says, "I am the way, the truth, and the life," and that if you happen to seek truth, that He will be found by you. Right? Ask and the answer will be given. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be open. So, so it's this. I think it's just really fun environment to that people long to be discipled, right? Whether it's, you call it employee training, human development or discipleship, it's this longing to say, wow, my company believes in me and that I have a lot to offer as I am now, but even more if I tap into these kind of innate things that I don't even know about myself yet, that we're on this, we call it in Liftful, we call it the journey of authenticity. We're helping people define and discover who they truly are meant to be, authentic, their authentic self. Because if they discover that, we think they'll be rock star employees that are really fully aligned, because they're not working for us as a company. In a sense, they're working for themselves to be the truest of themselves so that they can live out their purpose on life, which is incredibly fulfilling.
The journey of authenticity, the phrase that Matt says they use in their company, what we often describe as discipleship. It's that process of life transformation that for us as Christian business leaders has its foundation in the values that we heard Ken Blanchard speak about. You know, it takes intentionality, right? And FCCI is here to enable and inspire your effort to implement biblical values into your company and prayerfully, by the power of God, see people surrender their lives to His love and receive the gift of eternal life. My thanks to Matt and Tony for joining me on this episode of the Pathway to Purpose podcast. We'll continue to hear from business leaders from around the country on each episode of the podcast, and I hope you'll tell others about this opportunity to hear what God is doing through people just like you, people who are leading a company for Christ.